I have to use this.
Yes, well, that's for recording.
Oh, okay. Good morning. Yeah, I wanted to make the first session actually get to know session. So shall we start by, you know, giving a small introduction of yourself. Yeah, I don't need to introduce myself. I think you all received my bio data. So how about you telling me a little bit about you? Anthony, of course, I know, but for the sake of others.
Oh, yes. I'm Anthony. Nice to meet you all. Welcome, and you're always welcome here for Rinpoche's teachings. And I'm just a householder here. We're here for a year or so, and after that we may find other places, but I hope you join us whenever you can. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My name is Ken. I'm on the Kutchling board as well. Anthony and I are both on the board, and have been longtime supporters of the center. And we're just so glad to have Rinpoche here to teach us. So, yeah, welcome everyone.
I'm Jocelyn, and I haven't been here in a long time, and happy to be here again.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here since the beginning here. Place and also on the other place as well. I'm particularly excited to not only to come back here, but also to have someone that I can communicate with directly, and you can communicate with us directly. So it's a direct. So that's very exciting. But also the fact that you are a psychologist. I am one.
Okay, I see.
And so it's particularly very exciting for me. So I'm very happy to be here. Sorry I was late.
No, not at all.
My name is Tsering Wangyal. She's my wife. Her name is Sorna. We have come here for the first day today, along with our friend Jean, and the little boy is our grandson. We are coming from Egan. We have been here for many years in the States, and we are very close friends with our neighbor Jean, and we were just talking about Rinpoche, his presence, and what he's going to do. She was really interested to participate, so let me introduce her by herself. But we are good neighbors, and we just knew Rinpoche long before. So that's the reason that we are especially interested. Pass it over to Jean, our neighbor.
Hi, I'm just so happy to be here. We come from Egan, Minnesota, and I had a long-term interest in interfaith work, and it's what I did in my profession until I retired, and now it continues, and I find it a terribly important time for us to work in this way. Thank you.
Mm.
My name is Cass, and Anthony, I met you several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were living in Phoenix. We had just, I had just returned from China. I had worked there for 3 years. I was asked to go over to start an international school for kids with special needs, especially in the area of autism. So I worked with very developmentally challenged children, along with working at in communities trying to, as a consultant, to help help them understand the area of special ed. And I've been very interested in Buddhism for many years because of my husband, who has been studying it far longer. And I'm just kind of a tag along, but we were here several years ago just visiting, and then we moved back. So now we're permanent residents in Minnesota and happy to be here. And when we heard you were coming, Rinpoche, we were excited, very excited. And as I said, I was supposed to be be someplace else today, and I called them and canceled and said, I'm sorry, there's something really important I need to be at tomorrow, so.
My name is Chuck. As Cass said, I've been retired a long time. I was a professor at Concordia University in St. Paul for a number of years. I went off to China and then Arizona, now we're back. Just a wonderful, auspicious announcement when I got the email. It said, Drupa Rinpoche coming. And so I said, oh, great, perfect timing. It's just wonderful. Thank you. When we came, before we moved, we decided to come up and stay for a month and got an Airbnb right across the street.
Mm.
I had no idea what auspicious neighborhood we were living in all the time. Wait, there's bugs all over. Cornered Anthony to say, what's going on here? So, this is great. We're really happy to be back. Forward to being here often.
Thanks. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Sorry.
I'm sorry, I arrived late. I had obstacles getting here. My name's Diana. We're just giving a background.
Introducing everybody.
Oh, okay. So, my name's Diana. I live in Minneapolis. I've been a student of Lama Zopa Rinpoche since 1996. Lived and worked at one of his Lama Yeshe centers in California, Vajrapani Institute, for a number of years, and have lived here for about 4 years.
Okay, thank you. And also thank you very much for being here today. And since I have started traveling, I know how weekends are so precious to lay people. Yeah. So I appreciate your being here, making this a priority. I am very excited. I'm very happy to be here. And I think I have mentioned to Ken and Anthony that the reason why I am happy to be here is that as a Rinpoche, I always have this strong belief that, you know, we are Rinpoche for no reason. We are Rinpoche because we are supposed to help other people. So there are different ways to help other people. I can give everybody $1 million or 10 million each, but would that be enough to benefit people? First of all, I wouldn't have that much money to really distribute 10 million to each and every sentient being. That's impossible. Even if I were able to do it, it won't help, it won't benefit. It may help in this life, but after that, that's all. But to share Dharma, to be able to give Dharma, that will be a real benefit. So that's why I always wanted to be able to teach. And I feel that having this opportunity, even though it's not a big crowd, but my belief is that even, let's say if I have 1,000 attendants, and if only one person benefited and put the practice for one day, I feel that my purpose is fulfilled. I have fulfilled my purpose. That was a successful talk or whatever event. So that's my belief. So even though it's not a big crowd, but just to share, I don't know that much. My knowledge is very little. But I'll try to share what I know. And that gives me joy. And another reason, that's more of a selfish reason, why I was so excited is because that back in monastery, of course, I finished my Geshe degree. And when we were in monastery, we really want to finish our studies as soon as possible so that there's no longer exams, no more attendance, no more have to, you know, all this late night debate and all that. So we try to finish. So that's why I jumped many classes. As Rinpoche, if you are able to do 2 years exam in 1 year, you are allowed. So I did few of that, and I finished quite quickly. And I always told myself that it's okay. Once you finish your Geshe degree, you would have plenty of time to go back and do the revision. But that never happened. The minute you graduated from monastery, you started traveling, you have some things come up, all these things. I never really got to sit down and do reading. So now that I have to share with you, I have no choice. I have to prepare. I have to read. So that really helps me to achieve this goal of really going back to studying all that Dharma text. So that's why I am very excited and very happy to be here. And I'm very grateful for Ganga Rinpoche for giving me this opportunity. And of course, if there's no center member, if there's nobody coming for classes, I wouldn't have the opportunity. So that's why I'm very grateful to you, and thank you very much for making this possible. So the today's topic is, what is Dharma and how to achieve lasting happiness through Dharma practice? It's a big topic, I think. And I don't know whether I have anything to say that you already don't know. But maybe my sharing may serve as a refresh, serve to refresh your memory, or maybe a revision. And unlike other academic studies, the Dharma, the more you read, the more you get. I have that experience. When you come across a text, you read for the first time, doesn't make any sense. Then you go back, read again, then you think that, oh, I understood. Then next time you go back, oh, still more. So the other article or novel or whatever textbook, you just read, if you don't understand first time, you read second time. When you understood, that's it. There's nothing more insight to be gained. But that is different when it comes to Dharma. The more you read, the more insight you get. So maybe my sharing will kind of trigger something to gain that insight. I don't know. I'm just hoping. Yeah. So what is Dharma? I think after hearing from you, I know that most of you have been a practitioner. You have been to many classes. You have been attached to Dharma centers. So you should already know what Dharma means, what Dharma practice means. But of course, people have different understanding, subjective understanding. For some people, just going to the temple is a Dharma practice. And just kneeling in front of Buddha is considered Dharma. And for some people, just offering a jaw stick or butter lamp is viewed as Dharma practice. And for some people, just reading Dharma books considered Dharma practice. And even here, you are sitting here listening to me talking. Some of you may view this as a Dharma practice. I don't know. Let's just hold on to that question and then we can come back and see. So the Dharma or Dharam is a Sanskrit term which literally means to hold. Have you come across this term? To hold. So what does this mean, to hold? And then there is a Tibetan term, chö chi, practice Dharma is chö. So what does this to hold means? So in order to explain that, I think I have to go into a bit of a detail because there are people who are not familiar with these different realms and all that. So when we say Dharma, is Dharma means to hold from the abyss of three lower realms. That's one way to look at it. Another way is to prevent us from falling into samsara, the cyclic existence. Or it can be understood as to prevent from falling into the joy of nirvana. I will explain. You may wonder why, you know, why is it too bad to enjoy or trapped in the joy of nirvana? So in order to explain all this, I think we have to touch a little bit on the Buddhist view on all this existence. So according to Buddhism, there are three realms in which we take turns. So we, all sentient beings, are called migrators, the one who transit from one life to another life. So every time we are born, we take a different life. So there are different, what you call, realms to be born into. So we have normally the three realms: the desire realm, the form realm, and then we have the formless realm. So all those who are under the influence of afflictive emotion and karma, one has to be born in either one of these three realms. So human beings, we belong to the desire realm. And in the desire realm, there are also six realms, which can be divided into two: lower realms and higher realms. In lower realms, we have the realm of God, demigod, and then we have human realm. And then in the lower realm, we have hell realm, hungry ghost realm or preta realm, and then animal realm. So when we take the meaning of to hold in the, what do you call, the lease, or what do you call, the first way is to, so with Dharma, when we practice Dharma, it will prevent us from falling into the three lower realms. So in order to not to be born, we need to achieve rebirth in other realms. So normally we say that to be born in God realm and human realm, or as a human being. So in order to achieve that, there are three requirements. In Buddhism, of course, nothing comes about without cause and condition. Everything must come about due to the cause and condition. That also concordant cause and conditions. You cannot expect, you plant a chili and you cannot expect to have fruits. So you need the causes that corresponds with the result. So in Buddhism, nothing comes about without cause and condition. So in order to achieve human realm or human rebirth, the minimum requirement is that your practice need to be founded on the practice of morality. That must serve as a foundation. So there are different ethical practices. The least one is what we call the practice of refraining from the 10 non-virtues, 10 non-virtuous actions. So that you need, as a minimum, you need to practice that. And that alone is not enough to guarantee a good rebirth. On top of that, that must be complemented by the six practice of six perfections. And even that is not enough. On top of that, it needs to be complemented by pure dedication. Of course, there's a pure dedication that there is another meaning behind that. So that's what we need. So from this explanation, we can kind of what you call the what is that word? I mean, this suggests that we need to practice minimum the non-refrain, the practice of 10 non-virtuous, refraining from the 10 non-virtuous actions. So let's say if we do that, is that enough? Yes, let's say in this life, I practice all that, I really abide by these 10 non-virtuous actions, I try my best to engage in the six perfections, and then, of course, I always have a pure dedication of all this. And then when I die, I achieve a good rebirth. But then there's no guarantee that next rebirth, there's no guarantee that you will be born again as a human being. So this goes on. So when will you have this guarantee that you won't be born in the lower realms? Only when you are able to eradicate afflictive emotions. As long as you have afflictive emotions inside you, there is never an escape. You will be trapped. You are trapped in that. You will have no freedom. You have to take rebirth, and that is not out of your choice. You have no freedom to choose your birth. So if you are lucky to meet Dharma, and if you have the time to practice, you may be born a human being, but if not, you may be born as animals, you may be born as pretas, you may be born as hell beings. Shantideva says that once you are born as animal or in lower realms, it is very, very difficult to come out of it. That we can understand. Look at the animals. Look at some clever dogs. They are very clever dogs. You just tell them and they seem to understand. But if you try to teach them one line of Dharma, will they understand? No. Even the cleverest animal, they won't be able to understand Dharma. Without understanding Dharma, of course, they cannot practice. We haven't seen any dogs meditating. Of course, on the YouTube, you see all this, but we don't know. Yeah, so, and even in Lamrim, I think you are all familiar with the Lamrim. Buddha himself said that those who goes from higher realm to lower realm is like the sands in the beaches. Its number is infinite. Whereas those who transit from lower realms to higher realm is like a dust that Buddha's nail, I mean the amount of dust that Buddha's nail can lift. So you can see the contrast. And that also actually we can tell from ourselves. So let's say we say that as a base, we need to practice 10 non-virtuous actions. Just look into yourself. Do we do that? Out of 10, how many do we practice? We all the time, let's say the easiest one is the gossiping. The minute we have time, gossip. It never occurs to us. So from this, from our own experience, we can tell that, yeah, actually, when the time comes, we know that it's more likely that we will go down than go up. So that's why as long as you have this afflictive emotions or afflictive mental states, anger, jealousy, hatred, whatnot, there is no freedom from samsara. So that's why you need to work towards eradicating those afflictive mental states. But then the race is, let's say if you achieve nirvana, is that enough? Now this is coming from the Mahayana point of view. And it says that no, it's not enough. Because all sentient beings, at this stage, we don't recognize. But they have been your mother and father and whatnot for countless number of times. When they were your mother or father, or your sister or whoever is kind to us, they had done the same thing the way that this life's mother or father or sister treated you with kindness. So even in conventional sense, when somebody did a favor to you, and if you don't repay the kindness, it is considered ungrateful. So now when you see that the sentient beings who have been your mother are suffering, and then if you just think of yourself, it says that is very selfish. That is not right. So you need to try to help them. So that is why we say that to protect or prevent oneself from just being what you call enjoying the bliss of nirvana. So you want to do more to liberate other sentient beings. So that is the meaning of Dharma in these three different ways. And this raises the question, so now how can we do that? How can we prevent ourselves from falling into the pit of three lower realms? There is no such thing. We all know that Buddha said that there is no such thing as, you know, Buddha will just lift you and bring you to Buddhahood. If there is such thing, he would have done that, because the whole purpose of Buddha's effort to achieve enlightenment is to liberate us. If he could do that by just lifting us from samsara, why wouldn't he have done that? So that's not possible. That's why Buddha said that the only way is that I show you the path, and then you take the road, you take the path. It's like guide. Now we have a lot of these guides. They won't accompany you, they won't bring us there, but you just read and then you have to walk to your destination. So Buddha just shows the path, and then we practice. That's how we get it. So now the question is, how? So in order to achieve human rebirth in next life, we have to practice the 10 non-virtues, not practice, the refrain from engaging in the 10 non-virtuous acts. So what are the 10? Let me test, quiz. Yeah. So three of body, four of the speech. But it all boils down to mind. So mind, it lies the commander-in-chief. If you have a ruling commander-in-chief, you know what happens. We all know that. Yeah. So it creates chaos, because our body and speech listen to what mind tells you to do. It commands you to do. So this brings to the next meaning of Dharma. In Tibetan it's called Chö. So Chö literally means to transform, to change. So first we have the to hold or to prevent from falling into this abyss. And now is the transformation. So when we say chö, of course there are ways to transform. You can transform somebody physically like monk. I cut my hair, I change into monk's robe, but physically I am transformed. But if my mind is not transformed, I may not even be a monk, even be a practitioner. We also come here with all that, you know, bringing all this, and sometimes I see that people wear like sand and all this thing, go to center and all this. But if nothing happens here, then there is no transformation, so there is no Dharma. So this again suggests that Dharma is about transforming our mind. That is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. Buddha taught 84,000 volumes of teachings, but it can be summarized in one stanza. Do not commit negative actions, do all virtuous actions. Completely tame your mind, that is the teaching of Buddha. So it all boils down to taming our mind. At the moment, our mind is wild, and that is very dangerous. In Bodhicharya Avatara, Shantideva says, what is the word? Semje langbo yendang ba. Narme nyoba chebatar. Langje ma du nyoba yi, tena dindri nyoba me. You got it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's saying that if you let loose a wild elephant, imagine how much destruction it can cause. If you let loose a wild elephant in a community or a settlement somewhere, it will just destroy everything in its way. If it destroys the houses, and it will even kill. It can even take lives, human lives. But that is the extent of damage or destruction it can cause. It cannot do more than that. It cannot send you down to the lower realm. But if we let our mind wild, not only this life, it can bring you right down to the lower realms, to the hell realm, to the preta realm. So that is why taming our mind is so important. That's why Buddha said, Tanyi tagi kyoninki, shene sushi kyondu, tanyi lebor duvena, kebetori chobachos. By the end of this session, you should all be, you know, well-versed in Tibetan. Because I've been reciting so many of these verses. Yeah, Tanyi dagi kyoninki says, one is one's own savior. He says, there is nobody will come to be your savior. So how can that be? Tanyi lewar tuena, once you are able to tame or transform your mind, then will you achieve nirvana or peace. That's what Buddha said. So what do we do? What is our normal habit? We are unable to identify our real enemy. We think the enemy is out there. Oh, that person. But real enemy is here. All the afflictive emotions, anger, jealousy, these are the real angers. And Shantideva continues on saying that even if the whole sentient beings stands on one side and try to harm you. He said that wouldn't harm you that much. But this inside you, the afflictive emotions, that will destroy you. That will cause more damage than the whole sentient beings against you. So we don't know that. We think that anger is good. We think that jealousy is good. We think that self-cherishing is so good. That's why we are all the time selfish. Just I, me all the time. We just ignore. We don't realize how other beings are so kind. And even in teachings, they said that we have to see other beings as wish-fulfilling gem in the 8 verses of mind training. Tāne simjīn tamjīn lā yīshīn nōbu lē lāwē, tuñjōn rūbē sāmbāyī tādu jīwar dzimāshō. It is not just poetically written down. There is reason for that. What can a wishful fulfilling gem can do? It can grant a lot of things. You ask for a BMW, there it appears. You ask for a big house, it appears. You ask for million of dollars, it appears. That's what is called wishfulfilling gem. But if you ask for good human rebirth, no. Rebirth in God realm, no. Can you please make sure that I don't be born, is it? As an become animals. No, you cannot do. But other sentient beings, through other sentient beings, we can achieve a lot of things. Like enlightenment. There's no way we can achieve enlightenment without compassion. We cannot develop compassion without sentient beings. In order to achieve enlightenment, we have to practice in 6 perfections. The practice of generosity. If there are no other sentient beings, how can we practice the practice of generosity? And how can we achieve the perfection of tolerance or patience if there are no enemies, if there are no others who irritates you? So in that sense, you see that other sentient beings are really, really, is actually more precious than the wishfulfilling gem, because it can give you enlightenment. It can give you nirvana. It can even ensure, like the practice of refraining from these 10 non-virtuous actions, is all in relation to others. Without others, you cannot practice non-killing, non-harm. How would we do that? So there is a reason behind all this. But we don't know that. Or maybe we know, but we don't care. So our habit has been that all the time we think that those afflictive mental states are our friends. And the minute that this one commands you, you just go. Anger comes on and says, say something, and you just say. And jealousy comes in and asks you to do something, you will do. Very evidently. Recently somebody told me, I thought that was a very good analogy. He said that we can trance into so many types of emotions. That's so true. We are peaceful now, and then suddenly we see something. Oh, anger comes in. Anger tranced. And we are just a medium, and then we just trance into anger. Like jealousy, all the other negative. If we are able to be the medium for positive mental states, it's very good. But no. Yeah. So that's That's so the in short. Oh, I didn't bring my. What is the time?
It's quarter till 11. You have 15 more.
Oh, so to 11, yeah. Hmm. Thank you. Okay. Hmm. Yeah. So in short, Dharma is about taming our mind. But if we strictly follow Lamrim, so there are three kind of Dharma practice. You are familiar with the three scopes. The small, medium, and the
great scope.
Great scope, yeah, right. Great scope. Yeah. So other than that, not practice. So now, remember, I asked you to hold on to that question. So you're coming here. Is it a Dharma practice? What would you say? Sitting here listening to my rubbish. What do you think?
Well, it depends which scope you're in.
Okay, explain.
Well, the greater scope, you know, it's not Dharma unless you practice it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would apply for the other scopes as well, because you have to practice it, so you have to...
No, I mean... Just sitting here listening, is it a practice, Dharma practice?
Well,
aren't you
it
practicing or not?
Not enough.
Okay.
Because if I sit here and I don't change my mind, my heart, mind, if I keep doing all these other things, I myself don't consider it
practicing them.
For myself, I don't consider it
enough. Okay. Okay, good. Anybody?
Yeah, I'll say something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Jocelyn is right. It depends on your own mind,
mm-hmm.
whether it's Dharma practice or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you, like the three types of vessels, if you either are closed off to it or you don't retain it, if you don't attempt to transform your mind, as you were saying, then no, it's not a Dharma practice. I think I would have a different opinion from Jocelyn, and that I recognize that everyone else like me has afflictions, and we may have the best of intentions, but these other things are going to come in to our minds, and we're going to fall down. Now, for this moment, for this hour, or 2 hours, if we want, we can try to transform our minds at least a little bit. And if we try to do that, then we have at least a little bit of Dharma, a lot more to do, at least a little Dharma. So that would be my take.
So my view is that, not really my view, what Lama Tsongkhapa says, and also Lama Adisha says, is that it depends on your intention. It depends on your motivation. So let's say somebody offering a joss stick or incense. If the person did it for the worldly gains, may I live long, may I achieve longevity, may I gain a lot of money, may I be successful in this life, may I become famous, all this, no matter whatever your action, does not count as Dharma practice. Some people may go to a big monastery, that's the Tibetan practice, or is actually practice, the Buddhist practice. They will go to monastery and make a big offering to the monks. They will sponsor the whole day, the meals, and then they will make money offerings to the monks. That's a common practice. They have to spend a lot of money. But then if their intention is to become famous, to receive praise. If I do this, wow, people will speak highly of me. They will say, oh, how generous he is or she is. Then, according to strictly speaking from the Lamrim, it's not a Dharma action. It's not a Dharma practice. So likewise, even here sitting here, if your intention is to just to collect intellectual knowledge or to, you know, gain some new information without any reference to next rebirth or nirvana or enlightenment, then it's just an intellectual, you attended just a lecture. Yes, you have learned a little bit, maybe, hopefully. That's it. That's not really a Dharma practice. So that's why in Buddhism, motivation always plays a big role. Your action does not speak. It's the motivation that counts.
Can I say one thing? That reminded me of something. Gen Ajahn used to always say, I think in his teachings, that used to stress that before even coming to the temple to receive teaching, that people should think that sort of do like a prayer, a motivational prayer, and say that I will achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, therefore I am going to attend this teaching. And then before even stepping through the door, used to always stress to think like that. And then he said something, then the action of it doesn't just become a Dharma activity, it actually becomes sort of like a Dharma.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's why every teaching, normally the lamas will spend few minutes or several minutes to really emphasize on motivation. I think those who have attended Lama Sivaramaji's talk, I think the whole 3 hours is all about motivation. Yeah, so that is very important. So we have to, and also we have to all the time be careful, because we may enter the room with that intention, but along the way, in the process, then all this, what we call the worldly concerns, secretly seeps into us, and yeah, we don't realize that. So that's why it's very important. So that's the first part. So now going to how to achieve lasting happiness through Dharma practice. So it's quite clear, isn't it?
It's easy.
Yeah. Yeah. So why are we here? You know, you have other things to do, but you prioritize this, and you are spending 2 hours here with me. Because we are driven by what is called our fundamental aspiration, which is to be happy and to avoid not to experience suffering. No matter whatever you say, oh, I'm here for this, I'm here for that, or even your job, why are you doing job? And why are you working? Or you can say, oh, because I need to earn money. But why do you need to earn money? Oh, because I need to pay my bills. Why do you need to pay your bill? If not, I wouldn't be able to eat anything. What happens? Suffer. If you eat, there's pleasure, happiness. So whatever we do, all our endeavor are actually motivated by this fundamental wish. Who doesn't seek happiness? But how are we doing? Fulfilling our this fundamental aspiration. This is very beautifully captured by Shantideva's stanza. This time I will read in English. Or maybe I'll just read in Tibetan first. tunyen torndu sem yo yang tunyen ni la ngombra juk tewan de yang timu be rangge tewa chadran joms ya it says although wishing to be rid of misery they run towards misery itself although wishing to have happiness like an enemy they ignorantly destroy it that one very beautifully captures our situation of course you can argue that who destroys you know his or her own happiness like an enemy who treats happiness like enemy but the giveaway is here the secret or what do you call the main point here ignorantly destroys it the hint lies in there of course we don't know that we are destroying our happiness we don't know that we are running towards the misery towards misery because we are ignorant we think that what we are doing is creating is what you call creating happiness and preventing unhappiness so that again comes down to the Buddhist concept of cause and condition even though we wish for happiness we do not cultivate the causes of happiness even though we do not want suffering we cultivate the causes of suffering so when the causes and conditions are there of course it is a nature you cannot help it comes about so how are we doing that so first one is very obvious most of us chase after material gains the pursuit of materialism many of us believe that the material gains bring us happiness and there's a lot of research there's lot of research on income and happiness I think Easterlin he is known for this research and there's a term called Easterlin paradox so normally we think that the more income you have the happier you will become so Easterlin analyzed all the data that is available data collected through a general survey over the span of 2 decades 20 years of data and what he found was that in America the income level has rose 3 times I don't know, that must be 1970s from there. It has 3 times it has increased. But the happiness level, no, it has not. Of course, there are research to show that the rich countries are happier than those of poor countries. Rich people generally a little bit tend to be, but income and all this have what we call the curlevinar relationship. That means it will go, they say the subsistence level only has effect at the subsistence level. When your basic needs are not met, then income plays, then money plays a role. That's understandable. If you have, you know, you are struggling for food, if you have money, of course, you can eat that and there is this happiness. But once you reach Once you pass beyond that subsistence level, income has no effect. But we don't think that. We think that if my salary goes up, I will be happier. That's why we spend so much time. All the time our pursuit is after materialism. We think that having a better iPhone makes us happier. Getting a bigger car makes our life happier. But the research says no, it's not. And it's same with the similar research. In Japan, that was in 1958, the per capita income rose by 5 times, but the people's level of happiness did not. And then the very interesting research is that they compared to this Gallup survey. They compared the, what do you call this, GDP of different countries. And the highest, Norway scored the highest in their GDP, but nowhere to be in the happiness level. Whereas Denmark, which did not score high on economic GDP, but it's the happiest. So this is so obvious. So that is why they say that this paradox. Even though income is supposed to, money is supposed to make you happier, but it does not. So there's this paradox. So why there are reasons? Why? So first they says that when income increases, aspiration for further material gain also increases. So they did an experiment. They compared the aspirations of people in those, what you call, the less developed countries and those who are developed countries. They see the stark difference, market difference, that the aspirations are completely different. And I think those who are developed countries, their basic need is up here. So when I first went to university there in Atlanta, so I had to rent an apartment on campus. So they sent me a list to bring things. So the list included like shower curtain and all that. So I thought, what kind of internet I should get? Because when you're university, everything is online, you have to submit your assignment. So my first concern is about internet, Wi-Fi and all the internet connection. Second was whether the hot water and all this. When I went there, there's Wi-Fi. There's 24 hours hot water. They never mention about it. Back in India, when you are looking for rooms, they will say, 24 hours hot water and we have Wi-Fi. You see the difference. Because here, Wi-Fi and hot and cold hot water has become a basic needs. Everybody assumes that you should have that. Whereas shower curtain is a big thing. So I was like, they asked me to bring shower curtain, but this? Yeah. So you see that the more you be developed, your aspiration also increases. So that's why, that's one reason. And then another is what is called hedonic adaptation. We have this tendency to accustom to a better facility. That's very true, isn't it? I lived most of my life in monastery. We don't have AC. And they were, during the hot months, we used to just the fan running there, close all windows, and just sleep with your shorts. And just, it's like, okay. But now I spend years in Malaysia, and when there's a window egg there, it's hot, it's like, so hot, you know, all this. You see, spoiled. I quickly got accustomed to that luxury. So that's why, even if you have money, so when you get that, you get used to that. The car, when you first get your car, let's say you are just finished your, you know, studies, you are starting your job, and you just got a old second-hand car, used car, you are so happy. Isn't it driving that? You're so proud that, wow, you have a car. And then after 3 months, 4 months, oh, this is a problem, that is a problem, this is not right, oh, that car looks nice. And then that excitement diminishes. And you're already eyeing for a new one. You work so hard to get that car. Yes, for a few months, another excitement, elation. Then started to find faults anymore. That's why it's called hedonic adaptation. Then one reason is why material, because they show that those who score high on materialism, they tend to score low on happiness. So the possible explanation is that they feel this distance from material goals despite their rigorous pursuit. You know what I'm saying? So there's this discrepancy between what they want and what they get. So likewise, yeah, you get a car, and then because of the media promotion of all that, you prefer, like iPhone. Every year they bring a new upgraded one. And your iPhone 6 works so fine, works so well. But you still have to have the iPhone 10. Why? Because of this. And then for some people, they don't get that. There's this gap. You want iPhone 10, but you don't have the money, despite your working so hard. So there is this feeling of distance from one's goal. And of course, one reason is that contentment. In the absence of contentment, that creates have one discrepancy. You have a lot of things, but you don't focus on what you have. But our tendency is focus on what we don't have. So that's also another problem. And then one reason is that pursuit of materialism, why it creates unhappiness, is that social relationship is the key in one's life, happiness of one's life. The better connection, social relation you have, you tend to be happier. If you are able to spend quality time with your family, you tend to be happier. But because of this pursuit, because of this chase after money, you tend to spend more of your time in office, working. And I have known people who are very well off, very wealthy, but still starts the day at 7, 8, and only comes home 8, 9 p.m., brings back work. So where can you get time, quality time, to spend with your family? So without that, in the absence of that, of course, then your relationship may strain, and then all that unhappiness arise. But you are driven by this. And this all comes down to, I think, contentment. When we don't have contentment, that's what happens. And recently I met a Tibetan young fellow, so he was telling me that he is doing two jobs, two shifts. So he was telling me that even he is doing two shifts, he says that it was like, he's like the courier guy. Gets the money from here, pay his bill, bill pay there, pay here, and end? No. And then the next month comes, pay this thing, no more. So you see, So that's why Shantideva says that ignorantly. So we, our focus is all on external things. We believe that external things can make us happy. We never think that it is here. That's why Shantideva is one. Sadhing dida kwe yodo, tenyi kwe kalala. You have to listen carefully. I'm not going to explain. Yeah, sadhing dida kwe yodo, tenyi kwe kalala. Lamdi samji kwe ni sadhing tamji yodan das. So that is basically saying that it's all here. When you tame your mind here, when you change this attitude, it is like changing everything. The analogy is that piece of leather. If you are to cover the whole forest to prevent the thorns from, you know, pricking you, your feet, and if you try to cover the whole forest with leather, you won't find enough leather to cover the whole area. But if you wear a piece of leather on your soul, or nowadays you have shoes, if you just put on a pair of shoes, it's like covering the whole forest. Likewise, if you try and fix your external things, it is impossible. You may be able to fix this situation here, but another situation arises. But if you fix this, if you fix your attitude, doesn't matter. No matter what is happening here, you will be calm and happy. So lasting happiness is the happiness that does not fluctuate despite all the surrounding changes. Normally we tend to be like, if something goes wrong, we're unhappy. If something goes well, so happy, elated. So there's a lot of fluctuations. But if you are able to maintain steady, calm mind, that's when we will be happy. And of course, from Buddhist point of view, all these mental afflictions, I think you have seen in the drawings of this cyclic existence. You have this inside, there's a pig, there's a bird, and then there's a snake. And all this going round. So pig represents ignorance. Snake, hatred. And then the bird, attachment. So we have this tendency. We have this attachment towards people who are close to us, close with us. And then those who are not close with us, we tend to develop aversion. All this springs from this ignorance of the true reality of oneself, how I exist. That's going to this emptiness theory concept. Yeah. So that's why when we have this, when we grasp on the true identity of self, then we have this attachment to this I. With attachment to this I, what happens is, then, yeah, this I, my, all this comes. And then when somebody, threatening that I and my, all this thing, then aversion comes. So we have to work on this I. If you are able to reduce that grief on this I and my thing, your life will be much, much happier. So that's how I believe to have a lasting happiness. If you are able to really look inside you all the time. So that's why His Holiness always advises people that from the morning to have a good motivation, make a determination that today I will try my best to be kind to others, to be helpful to others. I will try not to let myself under the influence of afflictive mental states. And then throughout the day, so the beauty part of Buddhism is that to practice, you don't need to go into a cave, or you don't have to sit quietly for hours. You can just go on to do your daily things, but you can still practice. So during the daytime, keep reminding yourself that, you know, I have already taken that, what you call, pledge to spend the day in a meaningful way by helping, through helping others, through watching my mental states. So if you do that, of course, first few days, you wouldn't even remember to do that. And when the night comes, when you try to reflect on your day, you will realize, oh, this happened. But that's normal, it's okay. And then when you realize that, oh, you haven't really followed through, so make stronger determination. Okay, today, yeah, I couldn't do that. But tomorrow, I will do better. So if you do that consistently, then there will come a day that it becomes the second nature. It comes. So even though somebody says irritating words, you will be able to say, come down. No point. So that's very good. So if you lead the life this way, and if you are not happy, then you can sue me. Yeah, I think that's all I wanted to talk for today. And even though the time says 10 to 12, yeah, because I've just followed the earlier initial program. So when you have other teachers here, it used to be 10 to 12. So I just put it 10 to 12. I realized that those days you need translator. But now I can speak directly to you. So we don't need that time. So we should change to 10 to 11:30. That's better. Yeah, some people, if they see it's 10 to 11:30, they may want to come.
Yes. Well, we also neglected to set up the conference call today. I'm sorry, because I know there's people who call in.
Mm.
We'll do that as well, because there are some people who, for one reason or another, can't be here. They're out of town or they're not well.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to make sure we do that.
Yeah. So we will every Sunday 10 to 11:30. We will, if it goes longer, it's okay. But if you have questions and all that, and then as you noticed from the program that every alternate Sunday is meditation. So of course, then the coming Sunday, we will just introduce meditation. Even though most of you are very familiar with meditation, but if there are newcomers, I thought that I will just do a bit brief introduction on meditation. And then all these topics, yeah, because I wanted to, I don't know whether there will be new people coming in or not. So that's why I just, first is more like a essence of all that, and then later we can develop. So that once we finish that, everybody is on the same page. Then we can proceed with others. So some of you may find it like, oh, it's boring, you know, it's the same old thing. Yeah, but you have to bear with me. So maybe, who knows, you may gain new insights. Who knows? Yeah. Yeah, so that's what we are planning to do. And I have my card here, and there's email address. So if you want to have a consultation or anything, you want to talk directly to me, just email me and we can fix a time, and then we can help. So I'm here for you. So if you need anything, just email me. If there is anything I can do, I'm happy to help. If it is beyond my ability, I will tell you that. So any questions? If no question, then yeah, okay.
Not one question, but I just remember hearing once, you know, when you talked about the attachment and the self, you know, thinking of two mountains, and we from one mountain look at the other mountain as other.
Yeah.
But that mountain is looking at us as other. And that whole idea of that separation, you know, as you were talking about the self, and looking at it as all.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's why His Holiness advice as a method to cultivate harmony. His Holiness says common humanity. Just think of a common humanity. We are all same, wanting happiness, not wanting unhappiness. When you look at that, I am same like him, he is same like me, then we will be able to reduce that in-group and out-group. So at the moment, we have this barrier. Or those who are friends of mine, we are in this group. And then those who does not belong here, they are out-group. Yeah, that is the problem. Yeah, if we are able to create bigger community. Because His Holiness gave a very good example. He said that, I don't know whether it's true or not. His Holiness says that European Union, before they have this European Union, they were enemies. They fought with each other, against each other. And then after this umbrella under the European Union, you see they are very, I mean, all are their, what are their allies, isn't it? So if we are able to have that umbrella, then of course we won't have this what you call the friction. Okay, if we have no questions.
I just wanted to share something that I see every time I walk into a Jimmy John's subway. It's this Dharma statement that says, the gap between more and enough never closes. And it struck me when I was listening to you talk about
wanting
more and more.
Yes.
I'm reminded of that every time I walk into Jimmy John's for a sub.
Yeah, we say that it is like drinking the ocean water.
Yes.
The more you drink, the thirstier you become. Well, I forgot to share a quote. I recently got this quote. Money cannot buy happiness, but it is more comfortable to cry in a BMW than a bicycle. So be it, isn't it? Okay, if no question, thank you very much. And we will say the dedication prayers.
Rinpoche maje panama ke gyoche keva nyamba meva kone gondo pewa sho kudze rabden jen namgara tine chojo geva da loza tembe jume sazume dove muze dadu gyuru jen korwe shengam so pendan tewa malu jungwe ne chenre sewa tenzin gyazo ye shabe sede bado tenbyo roje chedara kemba tang kundu sambu teya dejen teda gwenje jezo talo je gyawa deda tamje rabdo ngo shekbe gyawa tamje gi ngowa kala chodo ngabat daje gyewe zawan degen jang sangbo chuje rabdo ngowa rai gi.